Beyond the Bourne by John S. Glaspie. John Stephen Glaspie, research chemist and astronomer, was elected a Fellow of the Royal Astronomical Society in 1960. Among his books are The Dwarf Novae from 1970 and The Variable Star Observer's Handbook, 1971. He has written over 500 stories in various genres, mainly war and Western science fiction, crime and supernatural horror, most appearing under pseudonyms in the 1950s and 1960s. Sheila Kirby heard the footsteps the second day in the cottage. She was seated at her typewriter with the spring sunlight streaming through the open window behind her. Sheila had rented the cottage on the outskirts of Redford, a small Cornish village, in a frantic attempt to complete her novel. The deadline set by the publishers was now only 5 short weeks away, and it had proved impossible to work in her London flat. Too many distractions, the phone ringing incessantly, the noise of the traffic, which went on well into the early hours of the morning, friends dropping in at the most inconvenient times. In the end, she had to get away from it all. Total seclusion and amenable surroundings was what she needed, and here she felt sure she had found it. Redford was a picturesque little village on the coast, and Rose Cottage was situated a little over a mile away, set well back from the narrow country lane with a well-stocked rock garden leading up to the low latticed windows. She had already arranged for one of the women in the village to come in for 4 hours every day, just to keep the place tidy while she got to grips with her writing. The small front room was ideal as a work study. The large oak table held her papers, electric typewriter, and books, and the room itself was light and airy with a scent of early spring flowers wafting through the windows. Yet curiously, she was finding it difficult to put her thoughts into coherent order and set them down on paper. She had been feeling strange ever since moving in, a sensation of vague unease, as if there was some presence in the cottage, an unspoken threat hanging in the air. And now the unmistakable sound of footsteps just outside the door. She pushed back her chair and walked hesitantly towards the door, checking her watch. It was too early for Miss Manley. She would not arrive for another quarter of an hour. Besides, the footsteps were light and furtive, like those of a child. Trembling a little, she flung the door open. The hallway was empty, but the front door stood ajar. Stepping outside, she glanced quickly around the garden, half expecting to see a small form scampering away down the lane. Indeed, just for an instant, she did think she saw a slight movement among the bushes at the edge of the rock garden. But she had caught it with averted vision, and the instant she swung her head around to stare at it directly, it disappeared, and she could not be certain there had been anyone there at all. Puzzled, she went back to her typewriter and sat staring at the words on the page. Had it been one of the village children? She wondered. It seemed unlikely they would venture this far from the village, but perhaps they had been in the habit of coming out here when the cottage had lain empty, playing in the gardens where their parents couldn't see them. Maybe one, more adventurous than the rest, had sneaked into the house and had fled on hearing her get up and go to the door. She tried to settle down to her work, forcing herself to concentrate, but it was no use. The idea simply refused to come. Her thoughts persisted in flying off at a tangent. Lighting a cigarette, she leaned back, staring abstractly at the ceiling. "Would you like a cup of tea, miss?" The voice from the doorway made her jump nervously. Miss Manley stood there, her broad, good-natured face creased in a smile. "I was just going to put the kettle on before starting work." "Thank you, Mrs. Manley. I'd love one." "Sorry if I startled you, but the door was open, and this hall carpet is so thick you wouldn't hear me come in." "That's all right. I guess I was miles away." Mrs. Manley took off her hat and coat. "It won't be a minute," she called as she went through into the kitchen. Sheila stubbed out her cigarette and realized her hand was trembling. What Mrs. Manley had said was true. That carpet was thick enough to deaden the sound so that she would not have heard her come in. But she had heard those other light footsteps clearly, even through the closed door. In spite of the warmth in the room, Sheila felt momentarily cold, as if a blast of chill air had suddenly blown in through the window. Mrs. Manley came in with two cups of tea and some biscuits on a tray. She set them down on the table. As casually as she could, Sheila said, "Did you notice anyone running down the lane on your way here, Mrs. Manley?"
"Why, no. Don't tell me you've had someone prowling around."
"I'm not sure. Maybe it was just my imagination, but a little while ago I was certain I heard someone in the hall. When I went, there was no one there, but the front door was open and..." She stopped. Mrs. Manley had turned a shade pale and was staring oddly at her across the table. "Is something wrong?" Sheila asked.
"Why, no, miss. It's just that..." She broke off abruptly, looking away.
"Please tell me," Sheila said. "After all, I have rented the cottage now, so I have a right to know."
Mrs. Manley glanced nervously towards the door.
"Really, it's nothing. I don't set any store by these old superstitions anyway."
"So there is something odd about this cottage." Sheila drew in a deep breath. For a moment, her heart thumped rapidly, hammering away against her ribs.
"Somehow I sensed it the moment I moved in."
She paused, then went on a trifle unsteadily.
"You're trying to tell me the place is haunted, aren't you?"
Mrs. Manley looked uncomfortable, eyes downcast, studying the teacup in her hand.
"There are some folks in the village who say that, miss. But like I said, I don't believe in such things myself. I'm a God-fearing woman, and I believe the dead stay dead until the judgment day."
Sheila drained her cup and set it down on the tray. Inwardly, she was surprised at how calm she now felt.
"Tell me about it," she urged finally, lighting another cigarette.
"Very well, miss, if you're sure you want to know. It was all a very long time ago. I was only a child then, but I can still remember it as clearly as if it were only yesterday. A young couple had Rose Cottage then. They only had one child, Timothy. He was a pale-faced little chap, I recall. Never mixed with the rest of us in the village. In fact, I don't think I ever saw him outside the garden."
"You mean his parents never allowed him to leave the place?" Sheila asked, astonished.
"That's the long and the short of it, miss. Virtual prisoner he was.
Probably they thought he was too delicate to play with other children."
Sheila took one of the biscuits and nibbled at it.
"And what happened to him?"
"Pneumonia, I heard my mother say. He was playing alone in the garden when there was a sudden storm. He got soaked to the skin, afraid to run into the cottage. Within a week he was dead. Only 7 he was."
"Poor little mite," Sheila said softly. "He didn't have much of a life."
"Not much of a death either, if you listen to the villagers," Mrs. Manley retorted.
"I don't understand."
"You wanted to know the whole story, miss. They say that Timothy haunts the cottage and garden. They buried his body at the churchyard down the hill yonder, but his spirit can't pass beyond the garden perimeter any more than he could when he was alive."
"And you think it may have been him I heard outside the door?"
Sheila pushed the plate of biscuits away.
Oddly, she didn't feel as frightened by Mrs. Manley's tale as she had thought.
"If you heard anything at all, miss." Mrs. Manley got up briskly and collected the cups and the tray.
"I'd better be getting on with my work now."
"And I'd better try to get on with mine," Sheila thought determinedly. The publishers would not wait beyond the deadline, and she had never before been late in delivering a manuscript. Strangely, she found it easier to concentrate now than it had been before Mrs. Manley had told her that strange story. The words seemed to flow from her brain into her hands and onto the paper. By noon, she had already completed a further 2 chapters.
and after lunch he decided to go for a brief walk, leaving Mrs. Manley to lock up the cottage with her own key. There was a pleasant warmth in the air as she walked down the garden path, and only a few lacy clouds to spoil the blue mirror of the sky. At the gate, she reached out to lift the metal latch, then paused, uncertainly, as an odd compulsion came over her not to open the gate and go through into the lane. It lasted for only a brief second, but it made her breath catch in her throat as she fought instinctively against it. Once in the lane, she began walking quickly and tried to drive out the weirdly oppressive feeling that was threatening to overwhelm her. Back at the gate, there had been the inescapable sensation that something had been deliberately trying to hold her back, to prevent her from leaving the garden. She had intended walking into the village, for she had seen very little of it when she had arrived, but near the bottom of the hill she came upon a small lane on her right, and once more she experienced that strange urge, not so strong as earlier, but definitely present, telling her to turn down through the trees. Almost of their own volition, her legs took her between the low hedgerows, now coming into full leaf. In front of her was a small wooden gate, and among the trees, a small Norman church with its square stone tower and the clock face, which stood eternally at 4:15. The churchyard looked very old, with ragged rows of headstones, some just visible above the mossy grass. Many were so overgrown that she could not read the names carved into the stone. Acting on a sudden impulse, Sheila left the path and advanced towards the far corner of the graveyard between the mossy mounds, where a small solitary grave stood out on the edge of a black shadow thrown by a massive oak. She had to go down on one knee in the grass to remove some of the tangled weeds before she could read the inscription. There was only the name and the dates. Timothy Winnell, 1932-1939. There was no doubt in her mind that this was the grave of the boy who had died at Rose Cottage 50 years before. Yet what strange instinct had led her directly to it? What had made her turn off the lane instead of going on into the village as she had intended? Sheila rose quickly to her feet as a sudden chill seized her. The sun had gone behind a cloud and strange shadows seemed to move around the churchyard. With an effort, Sheila straightened her back and sucked in a deep breath. Now she really was letting her imagination run away with her. There was nothing here of which to be afraid, she told herself fiercely, nor at the cottage. She made her way a little unsteadily back to the lane, debated inwardly for a moment whether to go into the village, then turned and went back to the cottage. Closing the door behind her, she stood with her back pressed against it, listening intently to the silence, waiting for some sound to break the stillness. Nothing. Letting her breath go in a long sigh, she went into the front room, where Mrs. Manley had lit a fire in the wide stone grate. Standing in front of it, she held out her hands, feeling the warm glow spread into her body. She put more coal onto the fire before making herself something to eat, sitting in the chair next to the fireplace with a plate balanced on her knees. Afterwards, she tried to write, but the inspiration had left her. Realizing the futility of trying to work, she took a book from a small bookcase and tried to read for a while. The walk in the country air had made her tired, and after skimming through a couple of pages, she found her eyelids closing, her head drooping towards her chest. Then abruptly, she snapped upright, eyes darting towards the window. Something tapped the glass from the outside. Her hand fluttered to her mouth as she started from the chair. A little germ of panic set her heart palpitating in her chest, and her flesh twitched with a strange blend of terror and anticipation. The tapping came again, and as she edged forward past the large oak table, she thought she glimpsed a white hand. Just a hand, nothing more. Visible through the window pane, the small fingers rapping slightly against the glass. Her whole system had been prodded into alertness by the sound, her tiredness forgotten. With a wild, inarticulate cry, she dashed to the window and threw it open. There was nothing there. She shook herself mentally and tried to control the trembling in her limbs. What in God's name was wrong with her? Maybe it was because subconsciously she was dwelling on the past, on what Mrs. Manley had told her, and that visit to the small grave in the churchyard. For a few seconds, she remained there, peering out into the deepening dusk, striving to find some other external cause of the sound. But there were no trees or bushes close at hand, whereby the breeze might have set a branch rattling against the pane. Perhaps she had fallen into a doze, and the sound had been in a dream, from which she had abruptly awoken, carrying the noise over into bemused half-awake state, and her fertile imagination had added the rest. She made to pull the window shut, glancing down as she did so. What she saw then made her recoil instinctively into the room, pressing her back hard against the table for support. In the soft earth immediately below the window were the imprints of shoes, small shoes belonging to a child. Her thought stopped suddenly, retreating into a darkness which seemed to envelop her mind. Then reality jerked into place around her. She forced herself to consider the situation rationally, recalling the sense of sadness she had felt when Mrs. Manley had first told her of Timothy's short life. If he was doomed to haunt the cottage, there had so far been no malevolence in his actions. Perhaps all he had been doing was trying to attract her attention to his presence. After all, what harm could there be in the earthbound spirit of a lonely 7-year-old boy? She suddenly found herself able to move. Closing the window, she drew the curtains and returned to the fire. The feel of a presence in the cottage was strong now, yet strangely, in contrast to her earlier fear, there was something oddly comforting about it, as if it were glad there was now someone else living there. An hour later, she undressed and slipped between the cool sheets, falling almost at once into a deep and dreamless sleep from which she awoke feeling calm and refreshed. For the next 3 weeks, the pattern remained the same. Sheila slept like a log every night, something she had never been able to do before when engaged on a novel. During the day, she hammered out page after page with scarcely a correction or revision necessary. Timothy's ghost, if such it was, left her undisturbed. It was as if, having made his presence known to her, he was content to remain in the background, unseen and unheard. Once or twice, thinking about him, Sheila wondered if her acceptance of him and her actions had somehow allowed his shackled spirit to leave the confines of the cottage and garden, enabling him to pass on to some other realm of existence. Mrs. Manley also noticed a change in her. One morning, shortly after she arrived at the cottage, she broached the subject of Timothy, a topic they had both avoided for almost a fortnight. "I hope you don't mind me saying so, miss, but somehow I thought you might have left the cottage before now." "Why should I?" She looked up from the typewriter to where Mrs. Manley stood just inside the doorway, wiping her hands on her apron. Mrs. Manley seemed unsure how to respond. She continued to twist her hands in the apron, even though they were completely dry. "I thought you might have heard other things in the cottage which would interfere with your writing." "No, I've heard nothing since that first day. Besides, there's something about this place which seems to help me with my work. I've almost finished 3 weeks ahead of the deadline." "And will you be leaving once the novel is finished?" Sheila tapped her teeth with her pen. "I'm not sure. I did rent the cottage for 6 weeks. It would be a pity to cut my stay short. It's so peaceful here compared with London." "Peaceful it may seem, but things are not always what they appear. Surely you're not beginning to believe in what they say about the cottage being haunted, Mrs. Manley.
It's not a question of what I believe, miss. It's what you believe.
There have been others who have rented Rose Cottage in the past. None of them stayed here as long as you have. She added the last sentence in an ominous tone.
Perhaps they were afraid of the ghost. Sheila could not help the touch of malicious humor in her voice.
Mrs. Manley busied herself arranging the flowers in the vase on the mantelpiece, and Sheila noticed she was evidently trying to keep her emotions in check.
You really do believe that Timothy's spirit is here, don't you? Sheila said insistently when Mrs. Manley made no move to reply.
I believe there are certain things in this world which are best not tampered with, miss.
But surely you're not suggesting that Timothy would do anything evil?
If there are such things as ghosts, it can only mean they're earthbound for a purpose, Mrs. Manley declared stubbornly. She stepped back awkwardly to look at her handiwork.
I had a talk with my husband only a week ago. He asked me how you were getting on in the cottage, and he said I ought to warn you about staying here.
Warn me? Sheila opened the box of a new ribbon for her typewriter and slotted the spools into place. About what?
Andrew's a native of these parts, Mrs. Manley said by way of explanation. His family have lived here for generations. So maybe he's much closer to nature and these things than I am. But he reckons Timothy desperately wants to leave this place where he's been bound for 50 years.
Glancing up at Mrs. Manley, Sheila saw there was an expression of deadly seriousness on her face.
And how do you think he'll be able to do that?
I don't know, I'm sure. But Andrew said that the noises here aren't of much account, just so long as you don't see him.
Sheila recalled the small, disembodied hand she was sure she had seen tapping at the window. She got up from her chair a little more quickly than she had intended. This was ridiculous, she told herself. She had already convinced herself that if Timothy's ghost did haunt the cottage and the garden outside, he meant her no harm. Indeed, she had the feeling that his mere presence had somehow helped her to complete the novel well inside the deadline she had set herself.
I can't see what difference seeing him will make, Sheila said, a trifle sharply. She placed the cover over the typewriter.
I think I'll go for a walk while the sun's out.
She put on her coat, leaving Mrs. Manley to finish her work, and went out into the garden. Bringing up the subject of the ghost had disturbed her, and she found herself peering into the bushes, half expecting to see a small white face watching her. For some reason she felt tired and irritable. Had Mrs. Manley deliberately set out to frighten her? Maybe those other tenants who had left here so hurriedly had received the same kind of warning. It was quite possible that the folk here resented strangers coming into their midst. Looking back on the curious events of the first 2 or 3 days of her stay, she couldn't be absolutely certain they had not been anything more than products of her own imagination. Even those tiny footprints she thought she had seen in the earth beneath the windows had vanished the following morning, and there had been no rain that night to have washed them away. Well, she told herself firmly, if they were trying to get her to leave before the end of her tenancy, they had another thing coming. The thought of returning to London with its traffic roar and the constant ringing of the telephone appalled her. With a little luck, she would have the novel finished by that evening, and then she would spend a few more weeks just relaxing. There would be time enough to plan further work once she got back. Mrs. Manley had on her hat and coat when Sheila went back inside.
"I've left your tea on the tray, miss," she said, pausing at the door. "Don't let it get cold. And don't forget what I told you. Be careful if you mean to stay here much longer."
"I'll bear what you said in mind," Sheila said. She waited until Mrs. Manley had disappeared down the lane, then closed the door and locked it. The cottage was very quiet. That evening her finger seemed to fly over the typewriter keys, as if every part of her being was anxious to complete the novel. Never had her thoughts flowed so easily. By 10 o'clock it was finished, the last neatly typed page stapled into place. Heaving a sigh of relief, Sheila leaned back and lit a cigarette, smoking it slowly, savoring the feeling of contentment and final fulfillment. In the morning, she would pack it carefully and post it away in a small post office in Redford. Finishing her cigarette, she cleared away the tea things, switched off the lights, and went to bed. Sheila woke with a start. Her forehead was damp with sweat, and her heart was thumping fiercely. She lay absolutely still for several minutes, struggling to calm herself. She had had a vivid nightmare, the first since arriving there, and the dregs of it were still strong in her mind. There had been a face in her dream, the features startlingly clear, a child's face framed by jet black curly hair and wide eyes that had stared at her pleadingly, imploring her mutely to do something, but she hadn't known what it was he wanted her to do. Then she had been standing at the foot of an open grave, looking down at the small coffin, but the coffin had been empty, and glancing over her shoulder, she had seen far in the distance Rose Cottage on top of the hill, and a small figure standing just inside the gate, looking at her over the intervening distance with that same beseeching expression on its face. Dressing quickly, she swallowed a couple of aspirins in an attempt to ease the throbbing inside her skull. The best way to get rid of these nightmarish memories was to busy herself packing up the manuscript and get out into the fresh air, she told herself. The nightmare seemed not quite so menacing as she let herself out of the door into the warm sunlight, carrying the heavy parcel under her arm. Her headache was quite gone by the time she reached the village and discovered the post office crushed between the Red Lion Inn and a small butcher shop. The loud jangling of the bell above the door brought a young woman hurrying from the back. Taking Sheila's parcel, she waited, took the preferred 5-pound note, and stuck the stamps on the right-hand corner, hitting them hard with a cancellation stamp. Sliding the change beneath the grill, she said quietly, "You're the writer who's up at Rose Cottage, aren't you?" "That's right," Sheila gave a brief nod as she slipped the coins into her purse. "I suppose you know it's supposed to be..." The woman broke off hastily as if realizing she had something she had not intended. "Haunted," Sheila finished for her. "Yes, I've heard all the grisly details from Mrs. Manley." "Aren't you the least bit scared?" Sheila's lips tightened. "No. There's nothing there to be afraid of, believe me. People tend to exaggerate such things, whether they believe them or not." She was suddenly aware of rain slashing at the small leaded window, accompanied by a low thunder, and there had been no signs of clouds in the sky during her walk out here. Near the coast, she knew, these storms could sweep in from the sea within minutes. "You're not thinking of walking back in that," said the postmistress as Sheila made for the door. "You'll be drenched to the skin before you leave the village." Sheila opened the door and looked out. The rain came sweeping along the street in gusts, blown by the wind. Overhead, the dark, lowering clouds scudded swiftly across the heavens. Lightning flashed briefly to the west. There was no sign of any clearance towards the horizon. The young woman came around the corner and stood beside her. "If it's important, you should get back. You can borrow my bicycle," she said, pointing to the cycle propped against the wall besides the bow window. "I won't need it until tomorrow, and you can return it as soon as the storm passes." Sheila hesitated, then muttered her thanks. It was several years since she had ridden a bicycle, but after a few minutes she was pedaling furiously along the narrow road, head down against the wind and slashing rain. By the time she reached the bottom of the hill, the storm was at its height, and she was regretting she had decided to remain in the comparative comfort of the post office until it had passed over. Her leg muscles were beginning to protest as she began the uphill climb. Then, just as she neared the brow of the hill, there came a glaring streak of blue as the vicious lightning bolt speared across her vision. It struck the bare, stunted oak by the side of the lane, The glare momentarily blinded her, and the cacophonous roar of the thunder hammered at her ears as she jammed on the brakes. Through her stultified vision, she saw the oak sway, realizing it in an instant of sheer terror that it would crash across the lane in front of her. The front wheel slewed around on the wet, treacherous surface. Wildly, she threw out her right leg in the hope of saving herself from falling. She felt the front tire bump against the fallen trunk, buckling the wheel, hurling her forward. Somehow she managed to remain upright, blinking the rain from her still dazzled eyes. It was obvious the bicycle would take her no further, and her only thought was to leave it there and get into the cottage out of the rain. Violent tremors were coursing through her body as the closeness of her lucky escape penetrated her numb mind. Somehow she succeeded in clambering over the bare trunk. There was a sharp smell of ozone in her nostrils as she began to run blindly towards the gate a few yards away. She grasped it and thrust it open in her frenzied haste, staggering along the path to the front door. Fumbling in her bag, she found the key and inserted it in the lock, turning it jerkily. Inside the hall, she shrugged off her sodden coat and switched on the light. Then her mouth gaped. Her throat constricted until she thought she was going to choke. The small figure stood in the entrance to the front room, regarding her with solemn eyes. There was a faint smile on the curved lips. Somehow she found her voice. "Timothy?" She got the word out with an effort. The boy nodded, still smiling. Sheila felt herself grow tense and shuddery as the figure advanced slowly. Not hesitantly, she noticed, but with a strange singleness of purpose. Cold fingers closed around her hand. She felt herself being pulled towards the front door. "But you're a ghost," she wanted to say. "Even though I can see you, it's impossible for you to touch me like this." Unable to help herself, she stepped outside, and all the while the small figure beside her was urging her toward the gate. Rain still swept across the gray world in sheets, but she was scarcely aware of it. For a moment, she felt a sense of surprise as Timothy passed through the gate and into the lane. She wanted to ask him how he was able to leave the garden after being doomed to wander there for 50 years, but already he was tugging at her more urgently, drawing her closer to where the great trunk of the oak lay across the lane. She wanted to drag herself away, back to the cottage, but already his free hand was pointing downward, and she saw the twisted remains of the bicycle pinned beneath the tree, and the crumpled familiar figure lying beside it, eyes staring sightlessly in the rain-washed face.